Hey everyone, my name is Adam Webb. I am Chief Investment Officer for Blue Creek Capital Management. And this presentation really is a little bit about our organization. But when we start getting to the meat of things is how we go through our trade strategy selection and how we basically manage, select, and generate an outcome from the strategies that come across our table, so to speak. So first of all, I'll do a little run through of the organization, how we're structured, what we do, and then we'll get on to onto the strategy. Is there a Q&A session that people want at the end? Is that how it works?
People can type in questions in the chat, and you can either answer them. Are you able to see the chat?
I did see the chat. Yeah, so people have questions. They could.
Okay. Yeah, if anyone has any questions, just type them in there.
Fine, no problem at all. All right, cool. So okay, let's move on. I'll do the disclosure first, which everyone has to do, and especially as regulated entities, we're going to do it. So futures trading involves substantial risk of loss and may not be suitable for all investors. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future results. You should therefore carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your financial condition. In considering whether to authorize Blue Creek Capital Management, LLC to trade for you, you should read our disclosure document. The following information reflects our good faith judgment at a specific time and is subject to change without notice. Okay, so now out of the way, let's begin. So this presentation, I'll try and get as quickly as possible to kind of the meat, which is our strategy selection, and basically we'll just run us a little bit about me, what our markets universe is, what our two trading funds are, how we have our asset class attribution, our team, and the strategies that Blue Creek uses. So without further ado, I will just go through that. Okay, so next one. Sorry, I should turn my phone off. I apologize. A little bit about me. So I feel like I'm about 1,000 years old, but I'm, as my wife reminded me, I'm only 44 next year, so that's not too bad. So I started off in the mid-90s in the London Financial Futures Exchange, which was the equivalent of like the CME, CBOT, open outcry floor. I was there with whole trading, and then I moved over to Goldman's in 1999 when they bought them out. I kind of moved as the pits were dying off. Then I then moved to quoting and running our exotic options desk. I did that out of London, but also did that in Tokyo as well for a period of time. And we were pretty much the largest yen desk in the world by about 2003. I then went and set up my own market making business after I left Goldman's, and I've been doing that kind of ever since. So that's a kind of core company. We've been market making crude oil options on the CME and ICE. I also set up an IT company so that we could actually look at how we could get the lowest possible latency between. It's kind of the arms race to the fastest connection points. It is really now such an expensive arms race that it's for 99.99% of participants, it's just simply not, there's no edge there anymore. But kind of back even 10, 15 years ago, you know, you could purchase a section on a microwave link between, you know, Belgium and Frankfurt and get some defined edge, as long as it wasn't raining. Get some defined edge yourself there between London and Frankfurt. And this the same is kind of well documented for anyone in the States between New York and Chicago. So I then kind of spent some time whilst doing that looking at other organizations of how they go about their liquidity provision. So how they structure their options book, some of the largest oil desks, RWE, Morgan Stanley, and just looked at, you know, what it is they're doing and how they're going about doing that. I then set up an organization called MacroHedge, which continues to kind of focus on innovation in the options sector. I'm also now an investor in Deep Fried Capital, which is looking at crypto assets. And also the kind of my day job now is Blue Creek. So that's where we've got the majority of our clients are invested in, and that's what we're trading and managing for them on a day-to-day basis. Okay, I always kind of worry about that kind of long spiel, whether I'm going to take too much time, but hopefully it gives people a little bit of background. Okay, so our markets universe, we've got two funds, Energy Alpha, which, believe it or not, just focus on energy and currencies, and our macro diversifier. diversified. So that's equities, fixed income, metals, energy, currencies, and agriculture, all on listed exchanges. So they're futures only. So when we say equities and fixed income, metals, we're not underlying assets there. We are, or these are all futures. So for absolute clarity, there's no stocks. Everything we do goes down either the CME, Eurex, or ICE. Okay, so a little bit on the macro diversify program. So what we look for here is, you know, we've got a much wider range of asset sets. So we're looking at kind of equities, fixed income, metals, energies, currencies, agriculture. Each asset class is assigned specific fundamental triggers, growth, business cycle, sentiment, proprietary macro factors, supply and demand. And, you know, these, one of the things that is key to how we go about looking at something is that we try and trade our structures. Well, we don't try, we do. Our structures are limited risk. We don't take outright positions. Now, that can be, people are always mostly concerned about an outright short position in an option, or, you know, but often the thing that's the most painful, and you know, a death by a thousand cuts is a long outright position, as you're just paying the privilege to have something decay on you. So as I said before, we only trade on exchange listed futures and options and on futures contracts. So a more of a visual of how you know we allocate what we do and what our triggers are. So current and future central bank policy shifts, volatility and skew, cognizant option spreads for asymmetric returns without unwarranted risk, and macro themes driving markets. This is how we split our allocation. We've got growth and value, business cycle sentiment, proprietary factors. From a base, we've got supply and demand, short-term mean reversion, vol skew, and probable path. So I'll go through some of the probable path and vol skew in how we go about our trades in a moment. And then a breakdown of our kind of markets traded when we say, you know, equities, energies, you know, what do we mean by that? So on the equities front, it's the kind of the big five, S&P 500, NASDAQ, Russell, Dow 30. And then the growing S&P 500 sectors, which is seeing more and more of a wider uptake in volume at the moment. Energies, we just stick to the majors. The reality of that is, you know, heating oil and RBOB are really not, you know, accessible to the size we need to be able to transact in. And we usually got to look at something of trying to get an exposed position via other means. Currencies, obviously lots of liquidity in all of those. Metals, the same. Grains, interest rates, livestock, softs, and volatility products. V-stocks, for anyone that doesn't know, is the V-stocks, the Eurostoxx 50 volatility index, same as the VIX for the S&P 500. And our strategy attribution layout is our monetary policy. This is kind of, you know, how we look at allocation and what are the things that drive in decisions, and making sure we've got enough, you know, to look at the opportunity that appears. And I'll show you how we kind of go about finding opportunities. We've got monetary policy, fiscal policy shift, skew opportunity and spread shift, and then our margin strategy attribution of that as well. So how much margin we will require within our model to allocate to that. So our energy alpha, max... runs and operates this with us, and it's a lot more specialized into the specifics around, you know, his background is certainly coming from the physical space, whereas I've always kind of been from the market making of the futures side. It's really been a great blend of him coming in, you know, actually, as he says, he counts barrels for a living, and he's very good at that and can find the gaps within the spreads. So the energy program seeks value in short and long term fundamental expectations. The advisor will look for current state of the US and global economies, the supply and demand of dynamics of energy markets, and expressing a view on US crude oil exports. While Blue Creek is the CTA, our programs utilize quantamental trend and mean reversion approach. Asset classes include energies and currencies, and the trade structures are designed to limit risk but not to take outright short positions. So similar, both funds are very similar, but there's a real focus just on the energy only that Rudy's doing. Sure, I don't think I thought that was a question. So the split here is the energy alpha is supply of the US and global economies, supply and demand dynamics of the energy markets in various locations, volatility and skew, cognizant option spreads, and asymmetric returns. All similar defining factors to how we go about the decisions on the macros, how we go about decisions on the energy. It's just the sphere of the approach is much more focused on energy, as you can see. We move as well. You'll see here is there's more HTTs involved, as we are looking at, you know, a whole range of US grades, and the asset and the allocation and margin allocation as well. Margin and asset allocation are the same, whereas the, as you can imagine, the macro one's got variance as far as margin goes. And our vehicles and investment minimums, so both programs were nominal minimal 12.5, a minimal notional 25, and obviously your cash is available within 24 hours. Okay, so a little bit about our team. So you all kind of must, well, if anyone that's been watching television knows Bill Baruch, his regular face out there on CNBC, Bloomberg, Fox, BNN, everywhere. I always smile every time I turn around in the chair, he's on telly. Bill and I, you know, we've been working together for a number of years, him and under his Blue Line Futures hat, and we decided to go with Blue Creek Capital together, use my expertise in the trading and the fund management, and Bill as far as the kind of the brokerage and our ability to access a number of markets. I mean, Bill's set up a fantastic business which is growing rapidly, but I think together we've really managed to set something up that's been really, really enjoyable with Blue Creek. Rudy Lombard is really running the macro, the energy side of the operation. So he's running the energy alpha fund. And Oliver, working, he's one of the directors at Blue Creek, but also one of the directors at Blue Line as well. And also Philip as well, another one of the directors at Blue Line, which is, he's over at Blue Creek as well. Right. Kind of a rundown of what we, who we are and what we do. I will now kind of go through as a potential strategy that we might engage in. Is there any questions of the first section, or should I just dive straight in? No, I think we're okay. Okay. Right. So, we may or may not use a strategy like this, but I wanted to, you know, we can't give away our kind of our proprietary outcomes, but what I can do is show you a sequence that we would go through as the a potential opportunity that we might look at. And I think in this example I've used soybeans. Obviously soybeans have been very popular and on quite a tear recently. So let's take a look and see this. So some rules: it's got to be limited risk, it's got to have more than 30 days left in the option, it's got to be highly liquid. What do I mean by that? The assets and the underlying options have got to be highly liquid, otherwise the spread's going to be erode, or when it's crazy, you're not going to be able to get out of your position, or if it moves deep in the money, it's just, you know, there's enough liquidity in the asset to be able to get in and out. And minimal hedging. What do I mean by that is you don't want a huge amount of gamma in the position that's causing you to lose sleep and creating a hedging nightmare. You know, you're, most of the people that are going to be listening to this or contemplating entering this space are not going to be market makers, and they're not going to be have highly sophisticated tools to minute by minute hedge, which is great for us as well, because that's just not how we operate either. So we work on that basis of keeping our hedging to an absolute minimum, not through being lazy, just through being I've wanted to be able to get some sleep and take advantage of a longer dated option. So we've got four kind of inputs and outputs. So we've got our model outputs. So this is an example coming from, we use an organization called QuickStrike. This is their QuickDNA platform and their volatility statistics. So the if we can look here, if we just take a look at soybeans, keep life simple. If I can annotate this, we'll get interactive. So soybeans is here. You'll see these dots here represent different things like call skew, put skew, risk reversal, call ratio, put ratio. There may be 20 delta, 25 delta, the implied volatility, versus 30-day historical, 1 year versus 2 year, 2 year only, 1 year only. So all of these are then plotted along a z-score at the zero mark here. And we might just be focused on, you know, what's sitting there in the, you know, two z-scores positive, or even potentially two z-score negative. So up here at the moment, something that's kind of clearly noticeable is we've got, you know, significantly higher, I know the color scheme being blue, significantly higher implied volatility on soybeans. So let's take a look at that. So we will then define, you taking that model, that we potentially have an opportunity, which we can see here, and we can see that the March contract, which has got 60 days, roughly 6 days, I think it's more like 75, but it maps fairly tightly to this underscore 60 means the constant, the future, and these are the two futures. So basically the futures are going up like crazy, and so is volatility as well. So some markets have a positive correlation to their direction. Others have a negative correlation. So crude oil down, volatility up. Gold up, volatility up. Corn up, volatility up. Equities down, volatility up. So the opposing is crude oil up, volatility down. Equities up, volatility down. Corn down, soybeans down, volatility down. So there's a usual path. You can clearly see that path here. You know, we've seen this futures contract move from a lowly 900 all the way up here to 1,250. And guess what? We've seen volatility move from 12% all the way, doubling, more than doubling, to 26%. So there's a positive correlation between upside volatility, upside movements in the future, and upside volatility with corn. So, but this is now kind of reaching a kind of 2.8 Z-score at the money volatility is on a 1 year basis. So is the risk now favoring potentially fading this? So if that's the opportunity, let's look at how we could potentially maximize that. So what might be the strategy? So I think the person that's flicked this photo on for me has just put it the wrong way around. Yeah, I don't know how that's happened, actually. That's really strange. Yes, so you'll see this is actually backwards. It's freaky. So you'll see this particular risk reversal, which is the other way around, which is just awful, really. I apologize. What we're seeing here is that this coming back down, because it's a mirror image, how crazy. We would be looking at volatility shifting for a very low risk position and the move back into this zone here. Obviously, if we kept running up, the risk of us losing as well is fairly limited, but that's a risk reversal play. What that's actually doing is to say, so for here, you're selling a call here, you're buying a put here, and then you're hedging it right in the middle, so that you're staying delta neutral, which is minimizing your risk, and you're looking for a change in that volatility space just there. So that potentially could be a strategy. But one of the things, you know, that's a more of a complicated way of looking at something. And what I wanted to do was to kind of bring people's attention to two other strategies that we might look at and how we might operate with those. You'll notice something that's quite interesting is that the futures contract over here in soybeans has two options contracts which are linked to it. It's got the March contract and it's also got the February contract. So the February's got 31 days and the March has 59 days. But they both expire into one futures contract. So you don't have what we'd call any futures spread risk for this trade. So let's take a look at that. Right. So what we've got here, if we're going to be looking, we still have that focus of looking at the downside. And what I've created here, let me just go back. I've got a blown up version of this. I can show you what we are. Reading view. Oh, I apologize. Okay, sorry about that. So what we've got here, remember the point where the G contract and the H all went into the same future, so we don't have any futures risk. So we haven't got spreads that might widen on us. Something that happens in crude oil, for example, is that every option that you see will always have so if there's an option here, an option here, and it'll have a corresponding future for each month. So if that's the G, and then this is the H, and then the next one along being the J, every option always goes into one its own future. So if you bought this option or sold this option, you have spread risk of these futures. And it's something that's kind of always people forget in the crude oil market, that those things can widen up on you. You think you've done really well. You know, you've all heard about the super contango or the super backwardation that goes on in crude sometimes. It happened during the crash this year. One of the things that cause many issues for a strategy is that you might take, you know, 20 ticks on an option strategy, thinking that, you know, you've bought one option and sold another, and you've managed to use the back option to fund what you're doing, and the spread's widened 70 ticks. Just kind of completely blown apart. It's well worth kind of making sure you understand understand which ones have contracts that go into multiple months. The S&P 500, the ES contract is great for it. It's loads and loads of contracts all go into a big quarter future. So we know that this just goes into this futures, this the futures contract sitting behind this. So what you can do here to lower your cost, I think when I priced this up, it was per one contract, it was only, I believe it was $225 for one contract to put this on. So this is a strategy here where you're buying a 1220 put and selling an 1180 put, but you are wrapping them across 2 months. So rather than just giving you, you what you're doing here is lowering the cost of just doing a call spread, sorry, a put spread, and doing it as a calendar put vertical. So you know, where does this get costly? Well, if the move you're looking for down doesn't happen quickly, you'll see that the long front month decays into a bit of a fat belly. These are what we call as a belly here. As these lines decay, this is in 23 days time, it decays off a little bit. But if you think this move is going to happen fairly quickly, let's say within the next week or two, you can get something going here. And as soon as you reach that inflection point, or the neck, as we call it, the twist, when you start to turn back in the favor of actually having the position decay in your favor, you know, that it's a very low cost way of being right quickly, or if it moves against you and you're wrong really significantly, it's also a low cost trade. So, you know, it's about, you know, as I said, it's five handles or $225 for 30 days worth of action. So it's a nice way of playing the ability of having none of that futures risk. And it also, you know, if I thought this wasn't going to happen for 20 days, this is not the strategy I do, because this decay belly here is always of a concern whenever we're looking at strategies. We you know, at Blue Creek, we're looking for longer dates. You know, I'd want all of these to have a zero on the end. I really would. And I know that doesn't get exciting for a lot of people. They find it kind of dull. So I've made things a little bit shorter that people can kind of look at, you know, what an opportunity is in a shorter period of time that's still viable. Okay, so let's see if this works. All right, we're going to go back up here. Something I was, I noticed, I didn't do anything on this, but one of the things I did on this soybeans, which we're looking at, you'll see. So if we look furthest away is the 23rd, you'll see how the call side, where all the vega is on soybeans, is really starting to flatten out. I mean, it's just now pan flat out here, you know, hence the arrow I've got here, you know, from 1360 right up to 1520, you know, volatility has not changed. The supply, the producers and the supply side of the market are absolutely leaning on a call overwriting right here. It's just, it's phenomenal. I love seeing those type of anomalies. You know, it's just, it's, you don't see that in many markets, you know, but, you know, true ags, physical markets, and you can really see them, you know, heavily leaning on that upside there. Okay, so we're now going to look at this put condor over here as another opportunity. If I can hold on, I can use my keyboard. There we are. Next one. Okay, so put condor. So this particular trade is not a symmetrical put condor, and you'll see that by the fact that, you know, we've got one leg above the line and one leg below the line. So, you know, if we do come up crashing down here, you can't lose any money, but the sweet spot of gain for you is between 1140 and 1220, and what you're looking for here is some decay. It's, you know, as we come down, what I said before was you'll have a market like the grains, where if you come off, volatility is sold, and you want to find a strategy where if we continue to go up, you don't lose much. You can see here, it's, you know, it's five handles all the way up. But if we come off, you really, really want to see a model. What happens if volatility came off 10%? You know, it went from the 26 down to 16%. You know, what would that look like? Well, all these payoff lines here would be way up here, and you'd be starting to get paid in that belly, because that vega would all be coming out. So whilst it doesn't look very appetizing when you look at kind of, you know, this thing's moved, you know, 60 cents and I'm only staring at five handles of income. The reality is that volatility would have come off so much that this would probably be more like here. So you have 20. So you've paid for something that, you know, it's cost you, I believe it costs five handles to buy, that you've managed to kind of get out here for 20. And it's just finding those nuances and those little kind of tiny things that a lot of people don't look at, because they they're just focusing on that big, you know, what we would call the break even or the at expiry view, this gorgeous, these shapes that everyone looks at, but in reality they're never attainable. You're looking at the reality of, you know, if we just did come down from here to here, what's volatility done? Highly likely could be off, you know, 10%. What does that make this look like? It's actually up here. And it's that they're the nuances and the real ways of trying to limit your risk in options trading, but try and maximize the movement of where the ball's going to be. I don't like that, you know, but great quarterbacks or, you know, whatever country you come from, you know, amazing center forwards at football will always, we want the ball passing to where they're going to be, not where they were. And that's very true of options. And I think I've whistle stopped through all of that in half an hour. I believe that's my last slide. Hello? Is there any questions?
All right. If we have time left. Does anyone have any questions? You can just type them in the chat area.
Hopefully, that was all understandable. Was it nice and clear, or was it I aimed at the right target audience? I didn't want to kind of split everyone apart too much.
yeah, that was good.
Great, excellent. All right, it doesn't look like there's any questions.
All right, I guess.